Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, everybody. This is Kevin Boileau, Nazarita Goldhammer. It's Epos Radio. We're looking at April 10th today, the year 2023. The increasing polarity between the beautiful and the dystopia that we see. So we have not only a fragmentation of self in our own human individuals, we have a fragmentation of values and self in our culture. So remember, we are talking about the interrelational self. That is, how are we to be with others? What does that look like? And what are our choices in that regard? And I just want to also say that it's a surprising number of people who continue to discount their freedom. They do it in all kinds of ways, from the nuanced and the clever to the vulgar and the coarse. That's part of what's going on, is that we're losing, as a culture, civilization, an awareness that we are free. Within our own natures, within our own physical beingness, we are free. And one of the themes that we continue to talk about with regard to the intimacy with nature is human experience that goes beyond the rational. Many people are inebriated with the rational, that the rational solves everything, logic, mathematics, science, hardcore philosophical argumentation. And we've reified it as a culture. We've reified this notion of rationality. But by doing so, we've squared off, created boundaries around wider and deeper human experience that would allow us to integrate with nature better. So it's absolutely true that this squaring off, this rationalization of the human experience, has developed lots of science, technology, the ability to change the world, the physical landscape of the world, but no problem. That's absolutely true. But the situation we put ourselves into is that we're now alienated. So we did it to perfect. We did it. We got a big dose what would you call it? Hubris. That we could control the world, and we have been. However, at the same time, in that control, which has largely been centered around greed, accumulation, money, capitalism, we can absolutely prove that we're good at that, and some people are really good at that. It's the hidden cost, it's the invisibleness of the destruction that people don't have an easy time looking at. It is very difficult to get a conversation about animal rights, animal slaughter, the destruction of our ecosystems. People don't want to talk about it. And we need to talk about it a lot more. We need to wade in to the swamp, neck deep. We need to go all the way in and look at what we've done. The more we turn away from it, the less good we're going to do. We need to be right in it, because that's what we've created. And I don't believe you can solve a problem until you've inundated yourself with it and understood it and feel it at a deep level. I don't think so. I don't think so. But everybody wants to turn away from the muck. They don't want to look at the pollution. They don't want to look at the eradication of species. They don't want to look at violence. And there's becoming more and more of it. So you can see how people live in more bubbled communities. Some are religiously based and some aren't. And there are lovely cults all over the world who are really good at creating ideological closures so that their members see a very limited view, but an alienated view too. So we lose by this over-intellectualization. We lose feeling. We lose intuition. We lose our bodied or embodied experience with the world. That's the key, is your embodied positioning in the world. And it's actually quite beautiful. Allow yourself to be embodied, to be in space and time, to be in the flesh of the world, and to understand that every part of the world is in you already. Everything you do has magnificent effects, and you yourself are affected. And we've created a culture full of really sick and diseased people as a whole. Sick mentally, sick physically, and therefore we're on the outside. People don't want to be on the outside. It's a really shitty place to be. People are anxious, they're depressed, they're falling into despair. You could do all the psychotherapy in the world, but you're not going to overcome that until the world changes. It is part of our condition. So the interrelational element is to learn how to participate with this beautiful creation that we have. So welcome to the show, Nazarita. Here we are, April 10th. I dedicate this show to Little Batai, who 2 years ago was still sitting and participating in every single radio show that we've ever done. And he was a full participant in the beauty of life. So welcome to the show. Tell us about what you think about this alienation. Yeah.
Well, what's really interesting is we just had, an amalgam, really, of a Christian holiday. There were quite a few holidays that converged in the spring, which should tell us something, that, you know, every culture, every alienated group of people has celebrated the rite of spring, where it's renewal, new things coming, hope. And they put it into these categories, the dumb it down into categories that most people can understand, which is usually, without the pagan one, is the Christian one, is you have a radical other. A radical other that bucks the whole system and tells people to share, to love, to forgive. And yet what I find today is that most people who embrace that religion of the radical other are not radical others themselves. They don't want to be that. They don't want to change the way that they destroy or violence or speak or love one another or to be kind. They'd rather just put that little cross on in Christianity, wear a cross, and that's a symbol, a sign that says that, well, for one, you embrace this radical change, but you're not really the radical change. You know, it's really interesting, because in my life, coming up with people who were Christian, the cross meant a great deal, and it was always some flowery, diamond-encrusted symbol that they wore around their neck, or people gave them for birthdays or Christmas. And I always found it really interesting that to follow really let's just say Jesus, the radical other, which is the same in any religion, the radical other bucks the system. And yet we dumb it down for people who don't want to follow that. They don't want to be kind. They don't want to turn the other cheek. They don't want to love one another. They don't want to cleanse the money changers from the temple. They don't want to buck the current system. What they want is they want more of the system while seeking to embrace what they think is a community that tries to get more people to embrace that without really giving up what the radical other actually says. So I think it's pretty symbolic at this point in our culture that in order to be a radical other, you have to see, as you said, see the system for what it is. And when you do, it's shocking. It's absolutely mind-boggling, shocking to think what is going on today can actually go on in a world of people who think that they are intelligent or smart or critical thinkers, or that they want to see beyond what is the fallacy in the front. But it's not true. And you can see that reflected in almost in what I would say every religion. Every religion has their key points that they supposedly embrace, but they don't really embrace them. They want to belong to the group that embraces them and to stay on the surface, which you and I have talked about for so long. It's like that yellow armband, that pink ribbon, but it isn't really doing anything to get rid of that and rid of the cause, the underlying cause of discomfort, disquiet, taking away freedoms to not think. And I find this is what you're talking about, this absolute, I think of it as mind-boggling, horrendous paradox that we live in a world and propose that we want peace, love, kindness, generosity, we want good relationships, but we are unwilling. We want changes in the system, but we are unwilling to be that change. We want someone else to do it. And then, of course, once everybody changes, then we could say, oh, yeah, we were a part of that a long time ago. But it's not really true. And so the hard part is actually embracing anyone who believes in any religion. It is really difficult to actually follow the proponents of that religion, the key tenets of what it really means. And instead, we barrage ourselves with bigger and bigger houses, more and more things. It's really hard to get off the internet. It's really hard for me to stop looking at my phone or to seeing new and interesting things. And yet, I see that this is like a wheel that keeps going, and it's really hard to get off, because when you think you're ready to step off, it goes faster. And it brings in all these cyclic desires that have to be faced. So one is animals. I mean, we've talked about this for so long. It's one of the biggest things that we could do is to stop eating meat or encourage others to eat more plant-based. Instead of encouraging, I mean, we have to be that. Like, grocery stores have to stop selling murdered flesh. People have to stop eating the legs of lamb, little lamb's legs for Easter, as they celebrate the slaughter. And I thought about this because a lot of people I know celebrate Easter in the Christian sense. And I think of what most Christians have missed. They have the empathy for Jesus nailed to the cross, right? It's a lot of empathy, but then of course he rises. But if you really interrogate that, you have to say, what was the underlying violence? And look what this radical other stood for. And are you prepared to do that? Not just to proselytize to someone else to say what you believe, but actually live that. You can be a Buddhist. You can be a Muslim. You can be any of those Christians. You could be any religious group, but to practice really the heart of those is really difficult. And 99% of most people don't. They give money to these big mega churches which of course the mega ministers, and they go out and spend it all, and the people are left with nothing until they find out that their, you know, Catholic Church is full of pedophiles. And yet people give so much money to the Catholic Church and think that it is such a beautiful ritual and all these things. And so here we are deluded, the alienation with the other. And that alienation starts with our own alienation from the radical other in us that would really change what we're doing to hurt ourselves and to hurt others. We have to be willing to be that radical other to change that. First in ourselves, we have to say, we're not going to do this anymore. And then to carry it out further and further and further, like a ripple. Anyway, that's what I've been thinking of, because here we are, we just passed, you know, Christian, a lot of things combine Easter egg hunts with, you know, there's a lot of Jewish people, and there's a vegan rabbi out now who is speaking out of not hurting animals, not eating them. And yet you can see where people celebrate holidays of what happened thousands of years ago without moving forward. What does that really mean in our lives? Instead of celebrating, my last comment is, I used to really look at what happened. I think it was, it's Ireland, where one group was against the other, the orange shirts, right? It was an uprising. It was a fight that happened hundreds of years ago. And every year they mark this big battle by people walking through the streets, tormenting those on the other side to show who they celebrate. It's like we have not moved past this eye for an eye, this competition, this refusing to give up that which hurts us and hurts others, because we want someone else to do it. And, you know, it's easier. Have someone else do it, and then we'll kind of follow along. But it does start with the radical other in ourselves.
Interesting. Speaking about the radical other, here's something that I've noticed my whole life, just my perspective, is that people have always been amazed that we could look to nature or look to animals for and use their own design. That we could actually learn something from other species for our own human good. And a huge element of hubris that somehow we're the smart ones, we're the Homo sapiens, we have brilliant engineers and technologists and physicists who can, you know, construct a world. And yet we're learning more and more that if we would just follow nature, biophilia, follow nature and learn from it, we could actually do better. And I've always noticed that. And so people disregard the other. It is a tyrannical 3-year-old, super ignorant, highly closed self-system. And then we have it on the cultural level. So here we are looking at this problem of being, creating a self. In other words, we'll just call it like yourself is like a house, and it allows in content and it restricts other content from entering the house in various ways. But let's say that the system I've built is so tight that I don't know much about what's going on outside of the house. I only know what I've allowed the house to bring in, you know, either by way of computer, breeze, sun, cold, other people walking on the street. So by pushing them out, by pushing out the outside and just keeping it out, I have this really small, somewhat controllable mind space. So I get a I get something out of that, right? I get a charge out of that. I get, oh, some kind of a fix, some kind of a reward, because I can control, and I live in this, and I live my life that way. So I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about a hypothetical person. And so I go to work. I have my human relationships in certain ways that are very conventional. And I am ripe to be colonized. I'm ripe because a system like that is so tight, so rigid, and so anxious, also willing to invite in relief. Because we've constructed it that way, so we want relief. So how can I get my relief? Well, I can get my relief by any snake oil salesman who convinces me in some way that I should live my life in accordance with the seeking of strong emotion or strong feeling. It's a hyperesthesia. It's an overfeeling rather than a non-feeling. But in order to have the overfeeling, too much feeling, you also have to have the non-feeling. They go together. They work against each other. So an example of that could be a person who is so antiseptic or so alienated. It's almost like living in solitary confinement. And they feel bad. They feel alienated. They feel alone. They feel in despair. And then you have the healing professions that try to give them some kind of cure, whatever, of whatever kind. Some way to explain it away. We can explain it away through fantastic psychological theories or drugs or strong feelings. You know, where there's a reactive element in the body that has a false sense of empowerment. And that hyperesthesia and the anesthesia don't in any way allow us to connect to what's outside of us, to reach our own self by reaching the other. I'll never reach my own self. I'll never reach myself. I'll never be intimate with me unless I'm able to reach what's outside of me. My very self-intimacy, my very self-love comes from being able to love what's outside of me. We have this lack of empathy that a lot of healers will point to. That's fine. But that's just the beginning of it. That's a very small piece of it. If I lack empathy, that's more of an outcome, because it means I literally do not reach the other. I've removed myself. I'm no longer a participant in life. I'm no longer a participant in the phenomena of life. I've removed myself from that. I've got something out of it. I've got hyperesthesia. I've got anesthesia. I've got intellectualism. I've got a semblance of control, but I'm not happy, and I don't have any joy, and I don't have any empathy. And it's literally because I have enclosed myself away from life. So I'm living in this pseudo life. It's like looking through a glass at life, but not being in life. And the human mind is very, very good at rationalization and creating all kinds of explanations about why we shouldn't participate fuller in life or be more open to the struggles of the other. or the struggles of our own self. In my opinion, it's a distortion when people say to love yourself, but not, they never focus on loving the other. It's also a distortion to say, love the other, and only the other. You have to love both the same, because we are all the same. In fact, it's not even like we're monads. You know what a monad is? Monad is an alienated, separate, encapsulated being. We are all the same. We're actually more connected than I think anybody knows. I've never met anybody who I've never read anybody, and I've never met anybody who really understood the degree of connection that we have with everything. We're seriously connected. So it's a position in being. Don't you think, Nazarita?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I recall that there was something that I found a while ago, that we share so many chromosomes with bananas, like we share DNA with bananas and things like that, which I always find that we share genes with all living organisms, and yet you're right. We actually try to separate ourselves in terms of not acknowledging that we are connected. I think that there's like two kinds of people now, like people who love animals and yet are afraid to actually get close to them because other people will kill them if animals get too close. And I always think of Yellowstone, where there's signs posted saying that, be careful, the animals are wild. And, there's this whole movement, rewilding, and how whenever anyone talks, just bringing this to a loop of themselves, they want to acknowledge that wildness in them, which is that freedom, that joyousness, that connection to nature. And yet we punish that. Like a lot of idiots will go to Yellowstone, blast their music, stay in their cars. They won't look at the animals. What they'll do is they'll just take a bunch of selfies. And that's their experience with nature. And at times when they venture out, because they're ignorant, they don't know wild animals anymore. They don't have that connection, that respect. And so then they're hurt. And then, of course, the park kills the animal because it didn't act according to what humans were expecting. I always find this to be so outrageous. Because in the wild, you're afraid to feed anything because you're afraid that they're going to get close to humans, which we should be able to connect with animals, that someone else will kill them. And because of our kindness. We do live in a world really divided into complete ignorance and those that start to see the connection to all species. When I'm in the car, I try to do something because I live in the city, and I try to do something that is more connecting to nature. I try to become aware of like dogs on the street or birds. I try to see how many birds there are, and believe it or not, what they're looking at. I mean, here they are. They're on top of every light. They're on top of buildings. They're in bushes, and they're looking at us. And yet we go through the world not even acknowledging their presence. Like, it's just kind of an afterthought. So I try to do that to get away from, my small space of saying, how can I see nature in a busy city without going on my phone, without, looking at other things, and that I try to really focus on that. That's the game that I play when I'm in the car. And so I often think there's a poem that I read, and it was that joy will come for you. It was that joy is there. Joy is 100% always linked with the natural world, of looking at the other, of looking at a tree or a leaf, or a crow's eye, or a fox, or you know, a dog or a cat or a wolf. It's that union. That's the joy. It isn't if your house is clean or if you're having a bad relationship or, you know, your car won't start or, you know, you want to buy something you can't afford. Joy comes through that connection with nature and the others. That's where it comes from. The rest is all transitory. It just is transitory. Doesn't mean anything.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm, I guess one of the things we've been talking about is there are more and more reports of climate change, global warming, like seriously harmful and potentially harmful events happening all over the planet right now. So the way I relate our conversation is to say I'm really not feeling and sensing and hearing enough concern. Because we just keep doing the same thing we're doing. I don't see any kind of real change, frankly, in how you, people in the United States live. I don't see it. But I am learning more and more that there's now, I think, Nazarita, a higher, greater reason a better opportunity than ever for people to really take control of their living space, because we're going to see a dystopian environment with flooding, droughts, wildfires, heat waves, cold, all kinds of unpredictable weather, and unpredictable humans. Violence is increasing. I can really see it in my own life, and I my own struggle has always been that I'm an intellectual academic. I read, I write, and I teach, and have done that for many years. So my challenge has always been to not ignore my environment. And I don't mean that as coarsely as it sounds. Of course, I don't completely ignore my environment, but actually become more sensitive to my environment. Because if I do that, then I have a reasonable chance of being stronger, having greater wellness. When I go outside to connecting with life, all of life, better, because I'm connecting with myself better. And so interior design does not have to be just for the wealthy. And it doesn't just have to be for the fitness gurus and the designers themselves or the architects. It could be for everybody. And I think there's a real opportunity in the United States, have a radical overhaul of what it means to live in an apartment, condominium, a small house, a revolution. And I don't know what's on the other side of that, but I see how my whole life, that most houses have been rectangular and box-like, and condominium spaces and apartments, and the spaces I've been in. It's been really rare that I've been in a space that I thought was different in a good way in my whole life. And so I imagine other people have that experience. What do you think about that? That we have more chance than ever, Nazarita, to all of us help each other work towards a much healthier living environment. Here's one example. One really simple example. I firmly believe that the kitchen should be the center of the house. Absolute center. Not off in a corner, but the absolute center. That's just an example. But what do you think about this opportunity?
I think that's kind of amazing because, you know, there's been a resurgence in the past couple of years about tiny living, right? And once most people who try tiny living with a full intent and open experience love it because what it does is it limits their desires and belongings and gives them more openness to think about other problems, to be more creative. Yet there's a large population that, you know, once they try it, they're like, ooh, this is really small. And I think it's part of that is our culture. Is our culture. Like I think like you do, maybe it's because I'm eating organic, I'm vegan, that the kitchen plays such a huge part in the way that we exist in the earth, our being. It provides us energy, it provides us, satiates our palate, it gives us good health, it gives us something that is really different than just fast food or just cooking something in the microwave or taking a pill. It's something that there's a community with plants. Like plants are plant medicine. They all hold this energy that gives us vitality and strength, and it fills us with a certain kind of feeling and is nourishing to us. And yet, I find that most kitchens are just boxes without the thought that we are actually eating for living. It's mostly eating for basic, extreme, not even existence. It's not made for healthy eating. It's just made, put it there. And it's kind of like what happened with the dining room, you know, where people used to kind of communicate and eat together, that there isn't usually, there's a pseudo dining room where people can have something, but it's rarely used. And I just think of that. I think you're right. The basic kitchen should be the center of the house because that's what gives you vitality. But remember, if you're eating junk food or eating meat and animals, then look at your space. It is not the center of vitality and health. And so all those tiny kitchens where nobody really cares about anything, that's what they're for. They're for to stifle vitality, to stifle health. And that's why we have big pharma, and that's why we have more and more hospitals, and that's why we have more and more drugs. It's directly related to the kitchen and how we eat. All those things just are lined up. But again, what we often think of is we need a better hospital, we need better health care, but we forget that health care comes through our kitchens. That's where we start, and that's where we have to change.
Right, and I have to say, it continues to amaze me that random average people of average intelligence continue to eat meat and dairy or to support it or to sit with people who are eating it. It shocks me because humans are really... This is part of what I'm getting at. There's a fragmentation in our own cell structure where a person can say, well, gee, I don't like this climate change stuff, and I do want to be healthy. And I don't want to know about all the nasty things we do to animals, but I'm going to continue to eat what you tell me, Kevin, is deleterious to the environment. I'm going to continue to eat meat now and again and cheese and dairy. And I'm not going to limit my behavior. I'm not going to tell other people what they can do. And this to me is, I have to say it, childish. I am responsible for the other person's responsibility. I have to be. It is an alienated form. I finally understand this, but it is an alienated form of moral thinking to say, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and I'll tolerate you doing what you're going to do, unless you harm me. Unless you harm me in an immediate, direct way. But that's a kind of moral thinking that's actually come out of this alienation. I should be saying, everything you do, like to my neighbor, everything you do affects me. You smoke cigarettes, you're hurting me, and you can't do that. You have to stop. And you're hurting yourself, and you have to stop. We have the responsibility to teach people. We all learn. I've lived, you know, much of my life in ignorance, and I've had to pull and claw myself up to a place of awareness. And so it's okay. It doesn't mean that we're being mean to people by saying, hey, get with the program. It means that we all have a responsibility to do it. We can love people by teaching them. You can really love somebody by teaching them. So Nazarita, do you, as we're winding down here, do you have any final comments you want to make for today's program before we sign out in the next 2 minutes?
No, why don't you close? I like the train of thought where you're heading and how you're putting it together.
Yeah, so we're talking about the very nature of responsibility. We're talking about the absolute distortedness of tolerance. That is a complete cop-out, is a complete lack of responsibility. I personally don't want to be associated with people who are violent, who carry guns, who are trophy hunters, who eat meat, who participate in slaughter, who eat dairy. I don't want to be associated with them. I don't want to be around them. I just don't want to. I don't want to be around them. I'll teach them if they want to learn, but I'm sure as heck not going to support behavior that I know is leading to the destruction of everybody. Why would I do that? So we do have to rethink the way we construct morality or moral thinking, moral cognitions. And it has to be in terms of participation model, not an alienation model, a participation model, that we're all in this together. It doesn't mean hurting people to admonish them, but it means to teach them. And in that participatory model, I am fully in the world. I'm fully intimate with all other life. It means I take responsibility. If I see an animal that's injured, I help him. I don't do anything that would potentially harm. And it means I take a much, much stronger sense of action. If I have to get up and I have to do something. To get up and I have to do something. So thank you, everybody, for being here. This is Epis Radio. It's April 10th. Thanks. Thanks to Nazarita. Thanks to me. We'll be back at you next week on the 17th, and we hope you have a nonviolent week.